Chapter 9. A Pair of Silver Pike. Egwene was sitting in her chair, one of the few real chairs in the camp, with a little plain carving like a farmer's best armchair, roomy and comfortable enough that she felt only a touch of guilt about taking up valuable wagon space for it. She was sitting there trying to pull her thoughts together when Swan swept aside the entry flaps and ducked into the tent. Swan was not happy. "Why in the light did you run off?" Her voice had not changed with her face, and she chided with the best even when she did it in respectful tones, barely respectful. Her blue eyes remained the same, too. They could have done for a saddle-maker's awls. "Shiriam brushed me aside like a fly." That surprisingly delicate mouth twisted bitterly. "She was gone almost as soon as you were. Don't you realize she handed herself to you?" "She certainly does. Her and Anayand Morvrin and the lot of them. You can be sure they'll spend tonight trying to bail water and patch holes. They could manage it. I don't see how, but they might." Almost as the last word left her mouth, Lyanna entered. A tall, willowy woman, her coppery face was as youthful as Swan's, and for the same reason. She also was more than old enough to be Egwene's mother, in truth. Lyanna took one look at Swan and threw up her hands as much as the roof of the tent would allow. "Mother, this is a foolish risk." Her dark eyes went from dreamy to flashing, but her voice had a languorous quality even when she was irritated. Once it had been brisk. "If anyone sees Swan and me together this way..."
"I don't care if the whole camp learns your squabbling is a fraud," Egwene broke in sharply, weaving a small barrier against eavesdropping around the three of them. It could be worked through with time, but not without detection, so long as she held the weave instead of tying it off. She did care, and perhaps she should not have called them both, but her first half-coherent thought had been to summon the two sisters she could count on. No one in the camp so much as suspected. Everyone knew the former Amyrlin and her former keeper detested one another every bit as much as Swan detested being tutor to her successor. Should any sister uncover the truth, they might well find themselves doing penance for a long time to come, and not an easy one. Aes Sedai appreciated being made fools of even less than other people. Kings had been made to pay for that. But in the meanwhile, their supposed animosity resulted in a certain leverage with the other sisters, including Sitters. If they both said the same thing, it must be so. Another incidental effect of being stilled was very useful, one no one else knew about. The three oaths no longer held them. They could lie like wool merchants now. Schemes and deceptions on every side. The camp was like some fetid swamp where strange growths sprouted unseen in mists. Maybe anywhere Aes Sedai gathered was like that. After 3,000 years of plotting, however necessary, it was hardly surprising that scheming had become second nature to most sisters, and only a breath away for the rest. The truly horrible thing was that she found herself beginning to enjoy all the machinations. Not for their own sake, but as puzzles, though no twisted bits of iron could intrigue her a quarter so much. What that said about her she did not want to know. Well, she was Aes Sedai, whatever anyone thought, and she had to take the bad of it with the good. "Mogedion has escaped," she went on without pause. "A man removed the Eidam from her, a man who can channel. I think one of them took the necklace away. It wasn't in her tent, that I saw. There might be some way to find it using the bracelet, but if there is, I don't know it." "That took the starch right out of them." Lyanna's legs gave way, and she dropped like a sack onto the stool Chesa sometimes used. Swan sat down on the cot slowly, back very straight, hands very still on her knees. Incongruously, Egwene noticed that her dress had tiny blue flowers embroidered in a wide Tyran maze around the bottom, a band that made the divided skirts seem one when she was still. Another band curved becomingly across the bodice. Concern for her clothes, that they be pretty instead of just suitable, was certainly a small change, looking at it one way. She never took it to extremes. Yet in another it was as drastic as her face, and a puzzle. Swan resented the changes, and resisted them, except for this one. Lyanna, on the other hand, in true Aes Sedai fashion, embraced what had changed. A young woman again, Egwene had overheard a yellow exclaiming in wonder that both were prime childbearing age by everything she could find. She might never have been keeper, never have had any other face. The very image of practicality and efficiency became the ideal of an indolent and alluring Damani woman. Even her riding dress was cut in the style of her native land, and no matter that its silk, so thin it barely seemed opaque, was as impractical as the pale green color for traveling dusty roads. Told that having been stilled had broken all ties and associations, Liana had chosen the green Aja over a return to the blue. Changing Ajas was not done, but then no one had been stilled and then healed before either. Swan had gone right back into the blue, grumbling over the idiotic need to entreat and appeal for acceptance, as the formal phrase went. "Oh, light," Liana breathed, as she thumped onto the stool with considerably less than her usual grace. "We should have turned her over for trial the first day. Nothing we've learned from her is worth letting her loose on the world again. Nothing." It was a measure of her shock. She did not normally go about stating the obvious. Her brain had not grown indolent, whatever her outward demeanor. Languid and seductive Damani women might be on the outside, but they were still known as the sharpest traders anywhere. "Blood and bloody... We should have had her watched," Swan growled through her teeth. Egwene's eyebrows rose. Swan must be as shaken as Liana. "By who, Swan? Faelaine? Theodrin? They don't even know you two are of my party." A party? 5 women. And Faelaine and Theodrin were hardly eager adherents, especially Faelaine. Nynaeve and Elaine could be counted too, of course, and Birgitta, certainly, even if she was not Aes Sedai. But they were a long way off. Stealth and cunning were still her major strengths, plus the fact that no one expected them of her. "How should I have explained to anyone why they were supposed to watch my serving woman? For that matter, what good would it have done? It had to be one of the Forsaken. Do you really think Faelaine and Theodrin together could have stopped him? I'm not sure I could have, even linked with Romanda and Lilaine. They were the next 2 strongest women in the camp, as strong in the power as Swan used to be." Swan visibly forced a scowl from her face, but even so she snorted. She often said that if she could no longer be Ammerlin, then she would teach Egwene how to be the best Ammerlin ever, yet the transition from lion on a hill to mouse underfoot was difficult. Egwene allowed her no little latitude because of that. "I want the 2 of you to ask about among those near the tent Mogedion was sleeping in. Someone must have seen the man. He had to come afoot. Anybody opening a gateway inside a space that little risked cutting her in 2, however small he wove it." Swan snorted, louder than the first time. "Why bother?" she growled. "Do you mean to go chasing after like some fool hero in a glee man's fool story and bring her back? Maybe tie up all the Forsaken at 1 go? Win the last battle while you're at it? Even if we get a description head to toe, nobody knows one Forsaken from another. Nobody here, anyway. It's the most bloody useless barrel of fish guts I ever—" "Swan," Egwene said sharply, sitting up straighter. Latitude was one thing, but there were limits. She did not put up with this even from Romanda. Color bloomed slowly in Swan's cheeks. Struggling to master herself, she kneaded her skirts and avoided Egwene's eyes. "Forgive me, mother," she said finally. She almost sounded as if she meant it. "It's been a difficult day for her, mother," Liana put in with an impish smile. She was very good at those, though she generally used them to set some man's heart racing. Not promiscuously, of course. She possessed discrimination and discretion in ample supply. But then most are. If she could only learn not to throw things at Gareth Bryn every time she gets angry. "Enough!" Egwene snapped. Liana was only trying to take a little of the pressure from Swan, but she was in no mood for it. "I want to know anything I can learn about whoever freed Mogedion, even if it's just whether he was short or tall. Any scrap that makes him less a shadow creeping in the dark, if that's not more than I have a right to ask." Liana sat quite still, staring at the flowers in the carpet in front of her toes. The redness spread to cover nearly Swan's whole face. With her fair skin, it made her look like a sunset. humbly beg your pardon, Mother." This time she did sound penitent. Her difficulty meeting Egwene's gaze was obvious. Sometimes it's hard to... Nope, no excuses. I humbly beg pardon. Egwene fingered her stole, letting the moment set itself as she looked at Swan without blinking. That was something Swan herself had taught her, but after a bit she shifted uneasily on the cot. When you knew you were in the wrong, silence pricked, and the pricks drove home that you were wrong. Silence was a very useful tool in a number of situations. "Since I can't recall what I should forgive," she said at last, quietly, "there seems to be no need. But, Swan, don't let it happen again." "Thank you, Mother." A hint of wry laughter curled the corners of Swan's mouth. "If I may say so, I seem to have taught you very well. But if I may suggest?" She waited for Egwene's impatient nod. "One of us should carry your order to Phelan or Theodrin to ask the questions, very sulky at being made a messenger. They'll occasion a deal less comment than Lyanna or I. Everyone knows you are their patron." Egwene agreed immediately. She still was not thinking clearly, or she would have seen that for herself. The headachy feeling was back again. Chesa claimed it came from too little sleep, but sleeping was difficult when your head felt taut as a drumhead. It would take a larger head than hers not to feel tight, stuffed with as many worries as she had. Well, at least now she could pass on the secrets that had kept Mogedion hidden, how to weave disguises with the power and how to mask your ability from other women who could channel. Revealing those had been too risky when they might have led to unmasking Mogedion. A bit more acclaim, she thought wryly. There had been great petting and exclaiming when she announced the once-lost secret of traveling, which at least had been her own, and more praise since for every one of the secrets she had wrenched out of Mogedion, like pulling a back tooth each time. None of the acclaim made an ounce of difference in her position, though. You could pat a talented child on the head without forgetting she was a child. Lyanna departed with a curtsy and a dry comment that she was not sorry somebody else would have less than a full night's rest for once. Swan waited. No one could be allowed to see her and Lyanna leaving together. For a time, Egwene merely studied the other woman. Neither spoke. Swan seemed lost in thought. Finally, she gave a start and stood, straightening her dress, plainly preparing to go. "Swan," Egwene began slowly, and found herself uncertain how to continue. Swan thought she understood. "You were not only right, Mother," she said, looking Egwene straight in the eye. "You were lenient. Too lenient, though I say it who shouldn't. You are the Ammerlin seat, and no one may be insolent or impertinent to you. If you'd given me a penance that made even Ramonda feel sorry for me, it would have been no more than I deserved." "I will remember that next time," Egwene said, and Swan bowed her head as if in acceptance. Maybe it was. Unless the changes in her ran deeper than seemed possible, there almost certainly would be a next time, and more after that. "But what I want to ask about is Lord Bryn." All expression vanished from Swan's face. "Are you sure you wouldn't like me to... intervene?" "Why would I want that, Mother?" Swan's voice was blander than cold water soup. "The only duties I have are teaching you the etiquette of your office and handing Shiriam reports from my eyes and ears." She still retained some of her former network, though it was doubtful any knew who their reports went to now. "Garth Bryn hardly requires enough of my time to interfere with that." She almost always referred to him that way, and even when she used his title she put a bite into it. "Swan, a burned barn and a few cows couldn't cost that much. Not compared with paying and feeding all those soldiers, certainly. But she had offered before, and the stiff reply was the same. I thank you, Mother, but no. I won't have him saying I break my word, and I swore to work the debt off." Abruptly, Swan's stiffness dissolved in laughter. Rare when she spoke about Lord Bryn. Scowls were much more common. "If you need to worry about somebody, worry about him, not me. I need no help handling Garth Bryn." And that was the strange part. Weak she might be in the One Power now, but not so weak that Swan had to keep on as his servant, spending hours up to her elbows in hot soapy water with his shirts and small clothes. Perhaps she did so in order to have someone at hand on whom she could loose the temper she was otherwise forced to keep in a sack. Whatever the reason, it occasioned no little talk, and confirmed her oddness in many eyes. She was Aes Sedai, after all, if rather far down. His methods of dealing with her temper, once she threw plates and boots anyway, outraged her and provoked threats of dire consequences. Yet though she could have wrapped him up unable to stir a finger, Swan never touched Sidar around him, not to do his chores, and not even when it meant being turned over his knee. That fact she had kept hidden from most so far, but some things slipped out when she was in a rage, or when Lyanna was in a humor. There seemed to be no explanation. Swan was not weak-spirited or a fool. She was neither meek nor afraid. She was not... You might as well be on your way, Swan. Clearly some secrets were not going to be revealed tonight. It's late, and I know you want your bed. Yes, Mother. And thank you, she added, though Egwene could not have said for what. After Swan left, Egwene rubbed her temples once more. She wanted to pace. The tent would not do it. It might be the largest in the camp occupied by just one person, but that meant less than 2 spans by 2, and it was crowded with cot and chair and stool, washstand and stand mirror, and no fewer than 3 chests full of clothes. Chesa had seen to those last, and Shiriam and Ramonda and Lelaine and 12 more sitters. They kept seeing to them. A few more gifts of silk shifts or stockings, 1 more dress grand enough to receive a king, and there would be need for a 4th chest. Maybe Shiriam and the sitters hoped all the fine dresses would blind her to anything else, but Chesa just thought the Ammerlin seat had to be clothed suitably for her station. Servants, it seemed, believed in following the correct rituals as much as the hall ever did. Shortly Salaim would be there. It was her turn to undress Egwene for bed, another ritual. Only between her head and her restless feet, she was not ready for bed yet. Leaving the lamps burning, she hurried out before Salaim could arrive. Walking would clear her head, and maybe tire her enough that she could sleep soundly. Putting herself to sleep would be no problem. The Wise One Dreamwalkers had taught herself that skill early on. Yet finding any rest in it was another matter. Especially when her mind boiled with a list of worries that began with Ramonda and Lelaine and Shiriam, then ran through Rand, Elida, Mogedion, the weather, and on out of sight. She avoided the area near Mogedion's tent. If she asked questions herself, too much importance would be given to a servant running away. Discretion had become part of her. The game she played allowed few slips, and being careless where you knew it did not matter could lead to be careless where it did. Worse, you could discover you had been wrong about where it mattered. The weak must be bold cautiously. That was Swan again. She truly did her best to teach, and she knew this particular game very well. There were no more people out and about in the moon-shadowed camp than there had been before. Handfuls slouched wearily around low fires, exhausted by their evening labors after a hard day's journey. Those who saw her rose tiredly to make their courtesies as she passed, murmuring, "The light shine on you, Mother," or something like, occasionally asking her blessing, which she gave with a simple, "The light bless you, my child." Men and women old enough to be her grandparents sat back down beaming from that, yet she wondered what they actually believed about her, what they knew. All the Aes Sedai presented an unbroken front to the outside world, including their own servants. But Swan said that if you believed a servant knew twice what he should, you only knew half the truth. Still, those bows and curtsies and murmurs followed her from one clump of people to the next, comforting her with the possibility that there were some at least who did not see her as a child, the hall brought out, when they needed her. As she passed an open area surrounded by ropes tied to posts driven into the ground, a gateway's silver slash of light flashed vivid in the darkness as it rotated open. It was not really light, though. It cast no shadows. She paused to watch beside a corner post. No one at the nearby fires even looked up. They were used to this by now. A dozen or more sisters, twice as many servants, and a number of warders bustled out, returning with messages and wicker cages of pigeons from the dovecots in Saledar, a good 500 miles west and south as the goose flew. They began scattering before the gateway closed, carrying their burdens to sitters, to their ajahs, a few back to their own tents. Most nights Swan would have been with them. She seldom trusted anyone else to fetch messages destined for her, even if most were in codes or ciphers. Sometimes the world seemed to hold more networks of eyes and ears than it did Aes Sedai, though most were severely truncated by circumstance. The majority of agents for the various Ajahs seemed to be lying low until the difficulties in the White Tower subsided, and a good many of the individual sisters' eyes and ears had no idea where the woman they served was at present. Several of the warders saw Egwene and made careful bows, with a respect proper to the stole. Sisters might eye her askance, but the hall had raised her Ammerlin and the Gaideen needed no more. A number of the servants offered bows or curtsies, too. Not one of the Aes Sedai hurrying away from the gateway so much as glanced in her direction. Perhaps they did not notice her. Perhaps. In a way, that anybody could still hear from any of their eyes and ears at all was one of Mogedion's gifts. The sisters with the strength to make gateways had all been in Saledar long enough to know it well. Those who could weave a gateway of useful size were able to travel almost anywhere from there and land right on the spot. Trying to travel to Saledar, however, would have meant spending half of each night learning the new roped-off patch of ground, more for some, every time they made camp. What Egwene had pried from Mogedion was a way to journey from a place you did not know well to one you did. Slower than traveling, skimming was not one of the lost talents. No one had ever heard of it, so even the name was credited to Egwene. Anyone who could travel could skim, so every night sisters skimmed to Saledar, checking the dovecotes for birds that had returned to where they had been hatched, then traveled back. The sight should have pleased her. The rebel Aes Sedai had gained talents the White Tower thought lost forever, as well as learned new ones, and those abilities would help cost Elida the Ammerlin seat before all was done. Yet instead of pleasure, Egwene felt sourness. Being snubbed had nothing to do with it, or not much, anyway. As she walked on, the fires grew farther between, then faded behind. All around her lay the dark shapes of wagons, most with canvas tops stretched over iron hoops, and tents glowing palely in the moonlight. Beyond, the army's campfires climbed the surrounding hills all around, the stars brought to ground. The silence from Camelin tied her middle into knots, whatever anyone else thought. The very day they left Saledar a message had arrived, though Shiryam had not bothered to show it to her until a few days ago, and then with repeated warnings on the need to keep the contents secret. The hall knew, but no one else must. More of the 10,000 secrets that infested the camp. Egwene was sure she'd never would have seen it if she had not kept going on about Rand. She could recall every carefully chosen word, written in a tiny hand on paper so thin it was a wonder the pen had not torn through. "We are well settled at the inn of which we spoke, and we have met with the wool merchant. He is a very remarkable young man, everything that Nynaeve told us. Still, he was courteous. I think he is somewhat afraid of us, which is to the good. It will go well. You may have heard rumors about men here, including a fellow from Saldaea. The rumors are all too true, I fear, but we have seen none of them and will avoid them if we can. If you pursue two hares, both will escape you. Verin and Alana are here, with a number of young women from the same region as the wool merchant. I will try to send them on to you for training. Alana has formed an attachment to the wool merchant, which may prove useful, though it is troubling, too. All will go well, I am sure. Mirana." Shiryam emphasized the good news as she saw it. Mirana, an experienced negotiator, had reached Camelin and been well received by Rand, the wool merchant. Wonderful news to Shiryam. And Verin and Alana would be bringing Two Rivers girls to become novices. Shiryam was sure they must be coming down the same road they themselves were headed up. She seemed to think Egwene would be all aglow at the expectation of seeing faces from home. Mirana would handle everything. Mirana knew what she was doing. That's a bucket of horse sweat, Egwene muttered at the knight. A gap-toothed fellow carrying a large wooden bucket gave a start and gaped at her, so amazed he forgot to bow. Rand? Courteous? She had seen his first meeting with Coiran Saildane, Elida's emissary. Overbearing summed it up nicely. Why should he be different with Marana? And Marana thought he was afraid, thought that was good. Rand was seldom afraid, even when he should be, and if he was now, Marana should remember that fear could make the mildest man dangerous, remember that Rand was dangerous just being who he was. And what was this attachment Alana had formed? Egwene did not entirely trust Alana. The woman did extremely odd things at times, maybe impetuously and maybe with some deeper motive. Egwene would not put it past her to find a way into Rand's bed. He would be clay in the hands of a woman like her. Elaine would break Alana's neck if that was so, but that was the least of it. Worst of all, no more of the pigeons Marana had taken with her had appeared in the Salidar dovecotes. Marana should have had some word to send, if only that she and the rest of the embassy had gone to Cairhien. Lately the Wise Ones did little more than acknowledge Rand was alive, yet it seemed he was there, sitting on his hands as far as she could make out. Which should have been a warning beacon. Shiriam saw it differently. Who could say why any man did what he did? Probably not even the man himself most of the time, and when it came to one who could channel. Silence proved all was well. Marana surely would have reported any real difficulty. She must be on her way to Cairhien, if not there already, and there was no need to report further until she could send word of success. For that matter, Rand in Cairhien was success of a sort. One of Marana's goals, if not the most important, had been to ease him out of Camelin, so that Elaine could return there safely and take the Lion Throne, and the dangers of Cairhien had dissipated. Incredible as it seemed, the Wise Ones said Coiran and her embassy had left the city on their way back to Tarvalen. Or maybe not so incredible. It all made a sort of sense, given Rand, given the way Aes Sedai did things. Even so, to Egwene, it all felt wrong. "I have to go to him," she muttered. 1 hour and she could straighten everything out. Underneath, he was still Rand. That's all there is to it. I have to go to him. That isn't possible, and you know it. If Egwene had not had herself on a tight rein, she would have jumped a foot. As it was, her heart pounded even after she made out Lyanna by the light of the moon. "I thought you were..." she said, before she could stop herself, and only just managed not to say Mogedion's name. The taller woman fell in beside her, keeping a careful watch for other sisters as they walked. Lyanna did not have Swan's excuse for spending time with her. Not that being seen together once should cause any harm, but should not isn't always will not, Egwene reminded herself. Slipping the stole from her shoulders, she folded it to carry in one hand. At a glance from a distance, Lyanna might well be taken for an accepted, despite her dress. Many accepted lacked enough of the banded white dresses to wear one all the time. From a distance, Egwene might be taken for one, too. Not the most pacifying thought.
Theodrin and Faerlane are asking around near Marigan's tent, Mother. They weren't especially pleased. I did a fine sulk over carrying messages, if I do say so. Theodrin had to stop Faerlane dressing me down for it.
Lyanna's laughter was quiet and breathy. Situations that grated Swan's teeth usually amused her. She was cosseted by most of the other sisters for how well she had adjusted.
"Good, good," Egwene said absently.
"Marana misstepped somehow, Lyanna, or he wouldn't be staying in Cairhien and she wouldn't be keeping quiet." Off in the distance a dog bayed at the moon, then others, until they were abruptly silenced by shouts that perhaps luckily she could not quite understand. A number of the soldiers had dogs tagging along. There were none in the Aes Sedai camp. Any number of cats, but no dogs.
"Marana does know what she is doing, Mother."
It sounded very like a sigh. Lyanna and Swan both agreed with Shiriam. Everyone did, except her.
"When you give someone a task, you have to trust it to them."
Egwene sniffed and folded her arms. "Lyanna, that man could strike sparks from a damp cloth if it wore the shawl. I don't know Marana, but I've never seen an Aes Sedai who qualified as a damp cloth."
"I've met one or two," Lyanna chuckled. This time her sigh was plain. "But not Mirana, true. Does he really believe he has friends inside the tower? Alviarin? That might make him difficult for Mirana, I suppose. But I can hardly see Alviarin doing anything to risk her place. She was always ambitious enough for three. He says he has a letter from her." She could still see Rand gloating over receiving letters from Elida and Alviarin both, back before she herself left Kyrian. Maybe her ambitions make her think she can replace Elida with him on her side. That's if she really wrote it, if it exists. He thinks he's clever, Lyanna. Maybe he is. But he doesn't believe he needs anyone. Rand would go on thinking he could handle anything by himself right up until one of those anythings crushed him. I know him inside and out, Lyanna. Being around the Wise Ones seems to have infected him, or maybe he infected them. Whatever the sitters think, whatever any of you think, an Aes Sedai's shawl doesn't impress him any more than it does the Wise Ones. Sooner or later he'll exasperate a sister until she does something about it, or one of them will push him the wrong way, not realizing how strong he is and what his temper is now. After that there might be no going back. I'm the only one who can deal with him safely. The only one. He can hardly be as irritating as those Aiel women, Lyanna murmured wryly. Even she found it difficult to be amused by her experiences with the Wise Ones. But it hardly matters. The Armorland seat being valued with the White Tower itself. A pair of women appeared between the tents ahead, moving slowly as they talked. Distance and shadow obscured their faces, yet it was clear they were Aes Sedai from the way they carried themselves, an assurance that nothing hiding in any darkness could harm them. No accepted on the brink of the shawl could manage quite that degree of confidence. A queen with an army at her back might not. They were coming toward her and Lyanna. Lyanna quickly turned in to the deeper dimness between two wagons. Scowling with frustration, Egwene nearly pulled her out again and marched on. Let it all come into the open. She would stand before the hall and tell them it was time they realized the Ammerlin's stole was more than a pretty scarf. She would... Following Lyanna, she motioned the other woman to walk on. What she would not do was throw everything on the midden heap in a fit of pique. Only one tower law specifically limited the power of the Ammerlin's seat. A fistful of irritating customs and a barrel full of inconvenient realities, but only one law... Yet it could not have been a worse for her purposes. The Armorland seat being valued with the White Tower itself as the very heart of the White Tower, she must not be endangered without dire necessity. Therefore, unless the White Tower be at war by declaration of the Hall of the Tower, the Armorland seat shall seek the lesser consensus of the Hall of the Tower before deliberately placing herself in the way of any danger, and she shall abide by the consensus that stands. What rash incident by an Armorlin had inspired that, Egwene did not know, but it had been law for something over 2,000 years. To most Aes Sedai, any law that old attained an aura of holiness. Changing it was unthinkable. Romanda had quoted that bloody law as though lecturing a half-wit. If the daughter heir of Andor could not be allowed within 100 miles of the dragon reborn, how much more they must preserve the Armorlin seat. Lelaine sounded almost regretful, most likely because she was agreeing with Romanda. That had nearly curdled both their tongues. Without them, both of them, the lesser consensus lay as far out of reach as the greater. Light, even that declaration of war only required the lesser consensus. So if she could not obtain permission... Lyanna cleared her throat. "You can hardly do much if you go in secret, Mother, and the Hall will find out, soon or late." I think you would find it difficult to have an hour to yourself after that. Not that they dare put a guard on you, precisely, but there are ways. I can quote examples from certain sources. She never mentioned the hidden records directly unless they were behind a ward. Am I so transparent? Egwene asked after a moment. There were only wagons around them here. And beneath the wagons the dark mounds of sleeping wagon drivers and horse handlers and all the rest needed to keep so many vehicles moving. It was remarkable just how many conveyances over 300 Aes Sedai required, when few would condescend to ride even a mile in wagon or cart. But there were tents and furnishings and foodstuffs, and 1,000 things needed to keep the sisters and those who served them. The loudest sounds here were snores, a chorus of frogs.
No, Mother,
Liana laughed softly. I just thought what I would do. But it's well known I've lost all my dignity and sense. The Ammerlin seat can hardly take me for a model.
I think you must let young Master Althor go as he will, for a time anyway, while you pluck the goose that's in front of you.
His way may lead us all to the pit of doom, Egwene muttered, but it was not an argument. There had to be a way to pluck that goose and still keep Ran from making dangerous mistakes, but she could not see it now. Not frogs. Those snores sounded like 100 saws cutting logs full of knots. This is as bad a spot for a soothing walk as I've ever visited. I think I might as well go to bed.
Liana tilted her head. In that case, Mother, if you will forgive me, there's a man in Lord Bryn's camp. After all, who ever heard of a green without even one warder?
From the sudden quickening in her voice, you might have thought she was off to meet a lover. Considering what Egwene had heard about greens, perhaps there was not that much difference. Back among the tents, the last of the fires had been doused with dirt. No one took risks with fire when the countryside was tinder dry. A few tendrils of smoke rose lazily in the moonlight where the job had not been well done. A man murmured drowsily in his sleep inside a tent, and here and there a cough drifted out or a rasping snore, but otherwise the camp lay silent and still. Which was why Egwene was surprised when someone stepped from the shadows in front of her, especially someone wearing the simple white dress of a novice.
Mother, I need to speak to you.
Nicola? Egwene had made a point of fixing name to face for every novice. No easy chore, given how sisters hunted all along the army's path, for girls and young women who could learn. Active search was still not well thought of. Custom was to wait for the girl to ask. Best of all, to wait for her to come to the tower. But 10 times as many novices studied in the camp now as the White Tower had held in years. Nicola was one to be remembered, though, and besides, Egwene had often noticed the young woman staring at her. Tiana won't be pleased if she finds you up this late. Tiana Nozella was the mistress of novices, known equally for a comforting shoulder when a novice needed to cry, and an unyielding stance when it came to rules. The other woman shifted as if to hurry away, then straightened her back. Sweat glistened on her cheeks. The darkness was cooler than the light had been, but not what anyone would call cool, and the simple trick of ignoring heat or cold came only with the shawl. I know I'm supposed to ask to see Tiana Sedai and then ask her to see you, Mother, but she'd never let a novice approach the Ammerlin seat. About what, child? Egwene asked. The woman was older by 6 or 7 years at least, but that was the proper address for a novice. Fidgeting with her skirt, Nicola stepped closer. Large eyes met Egwene's, perhaps more directly than a novice's should have.
Mother, I want to go as far as I can.
Her hands plucked at her dress, but her voice was cool and self-possessed, fit for an Aes Sedai. I won't say they are holding me back, but I am sure I can become stronger than they say. I just know I can. You were never held back, Mother. No one has ever gained so much of her strength as fast as you. All I ask is the same chance. Movement in the shadow behind Nicola turned into another sweaty-faced woman, this one in short coat and wide trousers carrying a bow. Her hair hung to her waist in a braid tied with 6 ribbons, and she wore short boots with raised heels. Nicola Trehill and Arena Nirmasiv seemed an odd pair to be friends. Like many of the older novices, women with nearly 10 years on Egwene were tested now, though many sisters still grumbled that they were 10 years too old to accept novice discipline. Like many of those older women, Nicola was ferocious in her desire to learn by all reports, and she had a potential bettered only by Nynaeve, Elaine, and Egwene herself among living Aes Sedai. In fact, Nicola apparently was making great strides, often great enough that her teachers had to slow her down. Some said she had begun picking up weaves as if she already knew them. Not only that, but she already demonstrated 2 talents, although the ability to see Ta'veren was minor, while the major talent, foretelling, emerged so that no one understood what she had foretold. She herself did not remember a word she said. All in all, Nicola was already marked by the sisters as someone to watch, despite her late start. The begrudging agreement to test women older than 17 or 18 probably could be laid at Nicola's feet. Irena, on the other hand, was a hunter for the horn who swaggered as much as a man and sat around talking of adventures, those she had had and those she would, when she was not practicing with her bow. Very likely she had picked that weapon up from Birgitta, along with her manner of dress. She certainly seemed to have no interest in anything beside the bow, except flirting occasionally in a rather forward manner, though not lately. Perhaps long days on the road left her too tired for it, if not for archery. Why she was still traveling with them, Egwene could not understand. It was hardly likely that Irena believed the Horn of Valir would turn up along their march, and impossible that she even suspected it was hidden away inside the White Tower. Very few people knew that. Egwene was not certain even Elida did. Irena seemed a posturing fool, but Egwene felt a certain sympathy for Nicola. She understood the woman's discontent, understood wanting to know it all now. She had been that way, too. Maybe she still was. Nicola, she said gently, we all have limits. I'll never match Nynaeve Sedai, for example, whatever I do. But if I could only have the chance, Mother. Nicola actually wrung her hands in pleading, and there was a touch of it in her voice, yet her eyes still met Egwene's levelly. The chance you had. What I did, because I had no choice, because I didn't know better, is called forcing, Nicola, and it is dangerous. She had not heard that term until Swan apologized for doing it to her. That was one time Swan truly had seemed repentant. You know if you try to channel more of Sidar than you're ready to handle, you risk burning yourself out before you ever come close to your full strength. Best you learn to be patient. The sisters won't let you be anything else until you are ready anyway.
We came to Salidar on the same riverboat as Nynaeve and Elaine, Irena said suddenly.
Her gaze was more than direct. It was challenging.
And Birgitta.
For some reason she said the name bitterly. Nicola made shushing motions. There's no need to bring that up. Oddly, she did not sound as if she meant it. Hoping she was keeping her face half so smooth as Nicola's, Egwene tried to quell a sudden uneasiness. Marigan had come to Salidar on that boat, too. An owl hooted, and she shivered. Some people thought hearing an owl in moonlight meant bad news was coming. She was not superstitious, but... No need to bring up what? The other two women exchanged looks, and Irena nodded. It was on the walk from the river to the village. For all her supposed reluctance, Nicola peered straight into Egwene's eyes. Irena and I heard Tom Merrillin and Juelin Sandar talking, the Gleeman and the Thief-Taker. Juelin said if there were Aes Sedai in the village, we weren't sure yet, and they learned Nynaeve and Elaine had been pretending to be Aes Sedai, then we were all jumping into a school of Silverpike, which I take it isn't very safe. The Gleeman saw us and hushed him, Irena put in, fingering the quiver at her waist. But we heard. Her voice was hard as her stare.
I know they're both Aes Sedai now, Mother, but wouldn't they still be in trouble if anyone found out? The sisters, I mean? Anyone who pretends to be a sister is in trouble if they find out, even years later.
Nicola's face did not change, but her gaze suddenly seemed to be trying to fix Egwene's. She leaned a little forward, intent.
Anybody at all? Isn't that so?
Emboldened by Egwene's silence, Irena grinned, an unpleasant grin in the night. I hear Nynaeve and Elaine were sent out of the tower on some task by the Sanche woman back when she was Ammerlin. I hear you were sent off by her, too, at the same time. Got into all sorts of trouble when you came back. Sly insinuation slithered into her voice. Do you remember them playing at Aes Sedai? They stood there looking at her, Irena leaning insolently on her bow, Nicola so expectant the air should have crackled. Swan Sanche is Aes Sedai, Egwene said coldly. And so are Nynaeve Almira and Elaine Trakand. You will show them proper respect. To you they are Swan Sedai, Nynaeve Sedai, and Elaine Sedai. The pair blinked in surprise. Inside her stomach quivered with outrage. After everything she had been through tonight, she was confronted with blackmail from these... She could not think of a word bad enough. Elaine could have. Elaine listened to stablemen and wagon drivers and every sort, memorizing the words she should have refused to hear. Unfolding the striped stole, Egwene draped it carefully across her shoulders.
"I don't think you understand, Mother," Nicola said hastily. Not fearfully, however, just attempting to force her point. "I merely worried that if anyone found out that you had—"
Egwene gave her no chance to go further.
"Oh, I understand, child."
The fool woman was a child, however old she was. Any number of the older novices gave trouble, usually in the form of insolence toward accepted set to teach them, but even the silliest had sense enough to avoid impertinence to the sisters. It fanned her anger to white heat that the woman had the gall to try this on with her. They were both taller than she, if not by much, but she planted her fists on her hips and drew herself up, and they shrank away as though she loomed. "Do you have any notion how serious it is to bring charges against a sister, especially for a novice? Charges based on a conversation you claim to have heard between men now 1,000 miles away? Tiana would skin you alive and put you to scrubbing pots the rest of your natural life." Nicola kept trying to push a word in. Apologies, they sounded like this time, and more protests that Egwene did not understand. Frantic attempts to change everything. But Egwene ignored her and rounded on Arena. The hunter took another step back, wetting her lips and looking remarkably uncertain. "You needn't think you would walk away clear, either. Even a hunter could be hauled to Tiana for a thing like this. If you're lucky enough not to be flogged at a wagon tongue, the way they do soldiers caught stealing. Either way, you'll be tossed out by the road with your welts for company." Drawing a deep breath, Egwene folded her hands at her waist. Clutched together, they would not tremble. All but cowering, the pair looked suitably chastened. She hoped those downcast eyes and slumped shoulders and shifting feet were not feigned. By rights, she should send them to Tiana right now. She had no idea what the penalty might be for trying to blackmail the Ammerlin seat, but it seemed likely that being turned out of the camp would be the least of it. In Nicola's case, the turning out would have to wait until her teachers were satisfied she knew enough of channeling not to hurt herself or others by accident. Nicola Trehill would never be Aes Sedai, though, once that charge was laid against her. All that potential would go for nothing. Except, any woman caught pretending to be Aes Sedai was set down so hard she would still be whimpering years later, and an accepted caught might very well consider the other woman fortunate. But surely Nynaeve and Elaine were safe, now they really were sisters, herself as well. Only, it might take no more than a whisper of this to erase any chance of making the hall acknowledge her truly the Ammerlin seat. As well jaunt off to Rand, and then tell the hall to their faces. She dared not allow these two to see her doubt, or even suspect. "I will forget this," she said sharply. "But if I hear so much as a whisper of it again from anyone—" She drew a ragged breath. If she heard shouts of it, there might be little she could do. But by the way they jumped, they read a threat that pricked deep. "Get to your beds before I change my mind." In an instant they became a flurry of curtsies of "Yes, Mother," and "No, Mother," and "As you command, Mother." They scurried away, looking back over their shoulders at her, every step faster than the last, until they were running. She had to walk on sedately, but she wanted to run, too.